If you missed it, a new report actually came out this week, and it shows elder fraud complaints to the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center increased by 14% in 2023, and its associated losses went up as well by about 11%. Again, this was the latest, the 2023 elder fraud report. It was just released on April 30th. And we want to talk a little bit more about this and just elder fraud in general. So joining the show is Fred Scholl. He is an associate teaching professor and director of the Graduate Cybersecurity Program at Quinnipiac University. And Fred, welcome. So glad to have your input on this on WICC.
Thank you. Yes, thank you very much for having me.
So tell us, first of all, Fred, I want to say I'm surprised, but working in news for as long as I have been, I'm not. I mean, talk a little bit about how, elder fraud, unfortunately, that has, I think, really been highlighted. And we're not even just talking scams, right? When we talk about elder fraud, what are we talking about here? Just so people can make sure that they're tuned into the program and understanding what exactly we're looking at.
Well, they're talking about any type of fraud. And by the way, the problem has been large and growing for like the past 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
They profile the over 60 group. They call that elder. And this group has financial losses and number of incidents that's 3 or 4 times, if I remember right, the losses of any other group, younger groups. And what this fraud is talking about is any kind of internet-based transaction where you're losing money, and so unknowingly. So it could be anything from fraudulent stockbrokers that are putting you into deals that go bad. It could be a lot of people get these fraudulent tech support calls that are looking to steal your information. It could be romance deals, romance scams that basically are designed to take your money away. It could be some of these advanced payment scams where they take your money in the expectation you're going to get some kind of product shipped to you later that's worth more. So it covers a whole bunch of things. The common thing is the fraud is that people don't know who is on the other side, and that's the weakness that we ought to be aware of.
It's interesting when you mentioned older Americans tend mm-hmm. to be more impacted by these scams. It actually says in the report, one of the 5 key takeaways is the fact that it says over 101,000 victims ages 60 and up reported this kind of crime to, again, the IC3, the Internet Crime Complaint Center. And that was last year. But it says on the flip side, victims under the age of 20 years old seem to be the least impacted, with about 18,000 victims who reported scams online. So cryptocurrency, for example. But I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second here, Fred, and especially because mm-hmm. you're with college students, college age students all the time.
Yep.
Do you think it's because, the older demographic, they're the ones who are getting the warnings constantly about scams out there, and this could be, AARP has really stepped up to try and make sure that seniors are better protected. Do you think they're the ones reporting because they know what to do versus young people? I know I've got 2 sisters under 30, and whenever they come across a scam, they'll put it in the group text. They'll send it out to the family or something, but they would never go to like the Better Business Bureau, or they would never go to one of these entities to say, hey, this scam happened to me. I don't know what to do, or I want to make sure other people are alerted about it. Do you believe that factors into why we see older adults kind of disproportionately impacted by these scams, or that's just like a small side note?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. So the younger people may not want to report this into this particular center, this I3C center. I still think, though, that the all the characteristics of the elder folks over 60, I think, just makes them more vulnerable. I still think that they're, they have more money. There's factors of loneliness, all kinds of things. So I think if you get a phone call, we all think, oh, gee, I better answer that phone call, right? Somebody's calling me. I'm important. So, but, you should never answer any phone calls from, if you don't know the people. They should pop up on your phone with a contact that you already have. The same thing with an email. You get an email. People want to say, oh, I'm going to correspond with this person. I'll tell them not to send them any more emails or text. You know, we all kind of feel we like getting messages from other people, right? So I think seniors, some are more lonely, some living by themselves. And obviously, they, for the most part, have more money than young people. So they're, I think they're more vulnerable. And there could be that factor that you just talked about. But I still think that the seniors are the ones that are getting hit with more of the losses, according to this report.
Yeah. And again, I'm so glad to have Fred Scholl here, who is, again, an associate teaching professor and director of the Graduate Cybersecurity Program at Quinnipiac University. And we are talking about this recent report. It came out earlier this week, and it looks at the amount of times people were reporting into the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center. And it shows that elder fraud reports went up about 14% just last year. So what are some things that we should be thinking about then, Fred? What would you suggest to our listeners? Again, when we say elder, I also want to note mm-hmm. that I love what you said, Fred, which is that elder to me, sounds like you're talking about maybe 80 plus. But mm-hmm. what's interesting is in this report, they're talking about 60 plus, which I know both my parents would not appreciate. But nevertheless, we're talking people who are 60 plus who are listening this morning. What should they be thinking about so that they are not contributing to this report, hopefully in 2024, and bringing that percentage up? We don't want them to become a victim to these kinds of fraud cases.
Exactly. Well, the two things I already mentioned, don't answer phone calls, emails, or texts from people you don't know. Another thing is you need to get, and everybody, even if you're not, don't want to be computer savvy, you should get a password manager. And I can mention one that's free, Bitwarden, and there are a lot of other ones. So that way you can keep passwords separate for all your different sites so that if your information gets hacked from one site, people can't use it to break into another site. So there's those two things. And sometimes if your kids have moved out, you're downsizing, make sure you shred all the documents you have. Just don't throw them in the trash. So those are a few things I think that would help.
And it's funny that
another one is be careful what you share on social media. Everybody wants to use social media. Just think twice about who's seeing it and how it might affect you.
We have Fred Scholl here, and we're talking about cybersecurity. Before, we were just discussing a report that came out this week, and it was looking at elder fraud. But something you had just mentioned, Fred, and I wanted to have you weigh in on the conversation, if you don't mind, which is, there are ways that we can better protect ourselves. And something that happened this week that I thought was, in my opinion, kind of elementary, was the CEO of United Health admitting that they did not have a multi-factor authentication in place during that cyber attack that happened back in February of this year. And this was a nationwide cyber attack. It impacted millions of different entities. These, patients and doctors, their documents, their personal information, some of the things you were saying, need to be shredded. People don't need to know about that was, exposed. And while they paid millions and millions of dollars in ransom and also to get better equipment in place, that to me seemed like a very avoidable cyber attack. And I wanted to help people understand what this system is and how they could use it in their own personal lives. I just think it's, not to harp on a situation, but it definitely put people in a vulnerable place. And I want them to know a little bit more about it so that they can hopefully avoid it just for themselves, their businesses. I mean, certainly the healthcare sector needs to, but in any facet of life, right? I mean, could you talk a little bit about this?
Yes, that is such a good point. So the breach occurred there because they didn't have multi-factor authentication set up in one of their critical systems exposed to the internet. And that is a very good thing that individuals and small businesses should carry out as well. So what it means is that when you're logging into your any internet-facing account, a bank or a brokerage firm or something like that, you should set up and configure two-factor authentication. So you will log in using your username and password. Then that organization will send you, typically they send you a text message or you have an app on your phone that generates a unique password, and then you put that in as well. So what it means is the only person who can log into the account has to have the username and password, and they have to have your phone in their hand, or their phone in their hand at the same time. So it really makes it way less likely that somebody can just guess your password, or somebody could have gotten a stolen. There are a lot of password breaches, and there are a lot of stolen passwords, you know, floating around the dark web. But just having that is not going to compromise your account, and that would have also blocked the breach, you know, the ransomware breach that took place at Change and United. So that's another key thing. You have to do it. So if you have an account at Bank ABC, you have to opt in. Sometimes they don't require you to have two-factor. If they don't, you should opt in for it. And if they don't offer it, you should consider going to another bank or brokerage firm.
Mm. Yeah, those are really great points. And another thing too, Fred, is, you know, going from the individual to the business. I know a lot of times you hear about these cyber attacks happening, again, in hospitals because they're kind of an easy entity. But we've also heard about them happening at schools. We've heard about them happening at businesses. What is your thought on hiring, you know, making, even if it's something that happens once a quarter, or maybe you add them as a part-time worker or per diem, whatever the case. What do you think about having a cybersecurity expert joining your team in some regard, especially if you do a lot of work, you have a lot of personal work? You know, like you had mentioned insurance. You know, if you have a lot of personal information about your clients, should businesses be taking it upon themselves to have maybe a cybersecurity expert look at their systems, check on it every few months, or even, you know, debating hiring somebody part-time to continue monitoring what they have in place?
Yes, absolutely. Just like you would, you know, you would have an insurance broker helping you with your business and a lawyer and things like that. So there are a number of firms in Connecticut that do support small and medium businesses. You could look for those. We also at Quinnipiac, we've been working with even, you know, smaller startup businesses in New Haven, just offering them free services to improve their cybersecurity. So there are different ways of, you know, there are people that cater to that, you know, small business sector. And I don't know, I would just look for the network with your colleagues in business organizations and find somebody and have them come in once a quarter and start making slow improvements. That's an excellent idea.
And Fred, is there anything else that you think people should be thinking about? I mean, one of the other things that I mentioned to the people who listen to my show, who are typically, you know, already parents of usually high school aged kids or older. So a lot of them kind of already empty nesters or maybe going into retirement. The importance of sharing this information with the next generation. I think going back to something we talked about before, if I've learned anything in the years that I've worked on this show and talking to people like you, the Better Business Bureau, many others, is that we are doing such a better job in America of highlighting how these scams happen, what you could do to protect yourselves, but it's really geared towards an older demographic. And so I don't know if the younger demo, like if I don't know if I worked in news right now, if I wasn't working in news, I don't know how much I would know about scams. I would honestly still think the grandparent scam is the worst. And we know that's not true. It's a bad one, but it's not the worst scam out there. So the importance of also sharing this information with the next generation. I didn't know if there were any other tips for people to try to combat this issue.
Well, just to mention one thing we're doing at Quinnipiac. So we have a summer camp, a cybersecurity summer camp that runs. So if people are interested in that, they could check that out on our website. But you're right, there's a huge population of people out there that aren't generally getting this kind of training. So parents, yeah, it's up to parents. You know, when people are still living in the house, your kids are still home, it's up to them to share this. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Fred, I really thank you for being able to bring this to WICC, taking the time out of your schedule to do that, because, again, I think that knowledge is power. And I think it's important that we equip ourselves with knowing our options to better protect ourselves, knowing what is out there, and also knowing that this is an issue. I mean, seeing this report and really diving into it this morning, I think is very eye opening. So I appreciate your time and for what you do at Quinnipiac. And I hope to have you back on the show again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Melissa. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. And again, yep. Fred Scholl is an associate teaching professor and the director of the Graduate Cybersecurity Program at Quinnipiac University. And I'm also with his podcast. I'm going to link that new report that came out this week from the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center so you can take a look for yourselves and sort of read some of the information there. It's really pretty fascinating, pretty daunting stuff.